Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, I hope you're doing well. Welcome back to another edition of the Ariel Helwani Basketball Show. I, of course, am Ariel Helwani, and I'm very excited about today's interview. Today's guest is Michael Carter-Williams, a man who has really seen and done it all in the sport of basketball from the high school days. He was obviously a top recruit. His time at Syracuse and then the NBA Rookie of the Year back in 2014, and has obviously had some ups and downs, had one of the best debuts in recent NBA history, that first game for him in 2013, still talked about till this day, but then was blindsided the following season when he was traded at the trade deadline. And he's bounced around and he's battled through serious injuries, multiple surgeries, but he is back in the league. He is back with the Magic. And it seems fitting that he's back with the Magic, because it really seemed over the last few seasons that he had found a comfortable home in Orlando. And so I'm delighted that he is back with the Orlando Magic, and he's a testament to working hard, to not giving up on your dreams. And also, he's a great role model because he doesn't mind talking about his battles with mental health, with depression, talked openly about that, about losing his family and getting them back, about the dark days after getting released from the Houston Rockets a few years back. Really appreciate him opening up, really appreciate his story, and love the fact that he is still fighting and back in the league. And so without further ado, here is my conversation with MCW Michael Carter-Williams. Enjoy. I'm very excited to talk to this man here today for multiple reasons. In fact, we actually have a lot in common. We're both fathers. We're both graduates. Well, not graduates. I graduated from Syracuse, but we're both alumni, right? That's fair to say, sure. From the great Syracuse University. Oh, we'll get to that in a moment as well. We both love basketball, and perhaps most importantly, we both love mixed martial arts. That's, in fact, how we first met through his love of MMA, and of course, me residing in that world for quite some time. He is of the Orlando Magic, longtime NBA vet at this point, former Rookie of the Year, the one and only Michael Carter-Williams. Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm good, Ariel. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And we've actually done interviews before, but usually it's been about MMA and your love of combat sports, your love of mixed martial arts. This time we're going to focus on your basketball career, the actual job, what has made you famous. So I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem at all. No problem.
You did mention, though, at the top there, soon to be a graduate of Syracuse?
Yeah, I have like two classes left.
Wow.
So yeah. So I'm trying, man. It's been a long road. So I'm trying to get that degree, though.
How long have you been working at it? Like since you left, almost a decade ago, or has it?
No,
been
not since I left. I took a bunch of time off. Like I took like 6 years off, and I was like, all right, let me see, because I kept, you know, during like the NBA meetings with players, they're like, you know, if you ever want to finish your degree, you know, they say it each year, like, you know, they give us our connecting person, and you know, the NBA pays for our classes, and they give us the whole nine. And it's always been in the back of my mind, like, yeah, I might as well just, you know, just get it, just because, you know, it's good to have. Nobody can take it away, and you know, who knows what I want to do after basketball, so you know, it can't hurt.
And your degree is
communications.
Oh wow. So are you going in this direction? Do you want to be a media guy?
I don't know. It's definitely an option of mine that I'd love to explore. I feel like, you know, I don't know you know, every year I'm like, I'm always thinking like something new, or, you know, every 2 years I'm in like a different space, or, you know, I got another kid, or something's going on. So, we'll see, you know, I there's a part of me that wants to get in the coaching side as well. So not necessarily need my communications degree for that, but, you know, it's just gives me another option.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of current players, former players, everyone's popping up with their own show, podcast, or you go into like, you know, the studio route, the analyst route. And I feel like now more than ever, as someone who grew up a huge fan, like to me, I knew nothing about Patrick Ewing. I loved Patrick Ewing, but the only time you would ever hear him speak is in the locker room, like 2 minutes after a game. Now I feel like the door has opened up. You know what I mean?
So yeah, like it's like that new media now.
Yes, it's crazy. Yeah, secrecy is kind of gone. Do you like that? Yeah. Or do you feel like we actually know too much about you guys? Like there's too much letting in to the public, or do you think that's good?
No, I honestly think it's good. You know, I think it, a real perspective, because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of analysts out here who just, you know, speculate and say, you know, this guy feels this way, this guy feels that way, or, you know, I've heard from a valuable source that this and that happens, you know what I mean? And now you kind of get it directly from the source, so you can kind of, it's cool, man. You know, I was watching JJ Redick, I was watching Draymond Green, you know, I watch all those guys, and they give a unique perspective of kind of what really goes on in the locker room. And but it's good, you know, I like to hear, you know, from both, you know, from both things, because, you know, obviously athletes aren't really professional analysis. It's like, it's just, so, you know, I kind of like hearing, you know, hearing both.
Well, you got the setup to become a podcaster, a broadcaster, whatever you want. So kudos on that.
Appreciate it.
Also kudos on returning to the league. You're back with the Magic, recently announced a new 2-year deal. You didn't play last year. First, why were you out of the league for the entire 2021-2022 season?
So I had ankle surgery, and then I was rehabbing my ankle, and it still wasn't feeling right. I ended up having to get another surgery. So I had two surgeries in the matter of like 6 months. So I needed a good period amount of time to really let my ankle heal. I kind of felt like it was my last, like, I felt like if I had another big injury after this one, it would have been like, you know, I had to think about, you know, hanging it up. So, you know, I really wanted to take my time and really rehab and do the, give myself some real time to, you know, let my ankle heal and let some of my other injuries and my whole body heal as well.
Okay. So while you were, you know, working to get back the surgeries, were you a member of the Magic team, or were you completely a free agent at that point?
So when they released me, so I was completely a free agent at the time.
Okay.
So they released me last year during, so I was on the team half the year. And then when the trade deadline happened, they released me. And then I was working out there for a little bit. And then I went out to California to rehab.
The reason I asked that is I didn't know if it was like, you know, a hush hush thing, because I saw you still rocking the Magic gear. I would see in the comments all the Magic players like giving you props and trying to motivate you. So I didn't know if you were like an official, unofficial member of the team, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, yeah, kind of like I was probably an unofficial member of the team. Like I was still in the team group chat. I'll still watch the games. You know, they would hit me up asking me what I saw, you know, in the game, what they can do better on. You know, I would just help them out here and there. I talked to Coach Mosley, you know, sometimes, you know, so I was kind of basically I was, you know, in the mix a little bit, but, you know, away from the team.
Was there ever a point, you know, two surgeries on the ankle, such an important part of the body, especially as a basketball player, where you were like, man, I don't know if I can overcome this. Like, did you ever doubt that you'd be able to actually make it all the way back?
Yeah. I had my doubts just because I think the rehab was so difficult, because such a tedious rehab, right? You're just going like this with your ankle on bands. And it's like, you can't really see any results. There's no, like, the check marks are, you know, how I'm moving better. And some days I move good, some days I wasn't moving good. So I was like, man, like, you know, should I start exploring other things that I really want to do? Should I, you know, but, you know, through the most part, my mind was really sharp on really trying to get back, because I really believe that I still have a ton of offer to the game. I feel like I can contribute to a team, you know, really well. And I always had that in the back of my mind. So I, you know, pushing forward was, you know, kind of those thoughts.
You're not an old guy by any stretch. You're still in your early 30s, but I feel like on this team, you are kind of the elder statesman, right?
I mean, yeah, I'm the oldest on the team.
You are, in fact, the oldest, which is wild, because to me, you're still, you know, the kid from Syracuse. It's amazing how quickly these last 10 years have gone by. How do you feel being in that role? Like, are you cool being the big brother, or is it still a little bit strange to you?
A little bit of both. It is strange just because I'm like, I do feel as though I'm not even that old. And, you know, all my teammates are young guys and they're all, they call me the grandfather, even though, again, I'm not old. But, you know, I embrace it. You know, I feel like I have a good perspective on the game, and I feel like I can, you know, give good advice on, you know, different scenarios. And I've been through, you know, so many different scenarios in my career, whether it's being the best player on the team, whether it's, you know, coming off the bench, being the 10th man, you know, I've been through so many different scenarios that I'm able to relate with a lot of people, you know, on the team. So, you know, I kind of give that voice reason to the guys, and, you know, they embrace it. I embrace it. So it's a good situation for the time being, but, you know, I definitely, you know, want to get back to, you know, get back to the real action.
Anyone in particular, maybe one or two people, maybe even more, that you've kind of taken under your wing? I know you haven't been there an incredibly long time since coming back, but like you said, you're still in contact over the past year. So anyone, would it be one of the point guards? Would it be someone else that you've tried to really help guide through everything?
Yeah, I think it's mostly the guards, because we do spend a lot of time together, whether it's in film, you know, after practice. So, you know, Cole and Jalen and, you know, even Markel, you know, those guys, I've really, you know, tried to pay attention to, you know, what they're doing, especially defensively. You know, I feel like offensively, we're just running and gunning. We're young guys. And, you know, I give comments, you know, here and there offensively, but mostly on the defensive end, strategic things on, you know, what we can be better at.
I saw a video. I'm not sure if it was your first game back, so to speak, but it was definitely early on, where after the starting lineups were announced, you were in the huddle with your daughter, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell me about that? That seemed very unique and a pretty damn cool experience as a father and as a daughter. How did that come about?
Yeah, man, that was definitely a timeless moment I'll never forget. I didn't even know how she got. I mean, she's close with there's this lady named Regan. She does. You know, we text her for the tickets, and, you know, during the home game, she's in charge of, you know, the family room and things like that. So I'm close with Regan, and she has a child as well. And Charlie and Regan's daughter are friends.
Okay.
So they were with each other before the game, and I think she brought them all down, and, I didn't even know she was there. And then, so I saw her, and we were going in the huddle, and, you know, I just picked her up, and we were all, you know, jumping. It was a great moment. It was cool.
Yeah. You rarely see that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone's kid in the huddle. That was incredible. And I'm wondering, if now you're a father of two, correct?
Yep.
And congratulations to your family on the recent new addition. Is part of the motivation here, like, it's pretty damn awesome to play in front of your kids, right? And they're still young.
Sure.
Your daughter is getting up there a little bit in it, where she can kind of understand what you do for a living. Is that part of the motivation to try to get back to play in front of them? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I definitely want to, you know, play in front of my daughter, and most really my son too, because he hasn't really seen me seen me play on the court. So that's definitely a big part of my motivation. And, you know, my daughter will ask me, hey, when are you gonna go play for the white and blue team again? Like, you know, and because she saw me working out for a straight year. So she loved going to the game. She loves Stuffy the mascot. So that's her big reason of why she likes going to the games.
Does she practice jiu-jitsu as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep. She actually, when I left to go rehab in LA, she stopped on me because she was she was giving her mom a hard time. But she's going to start going again, and once we get a little things routined a little bit more. But she was loving it, man. It was good. It was good for her.
What about you? Have you ever done it?
Yeah, I've done it. I took some time off from my ankle, but before that, I probably did it for like a year and a half, like straight. Like it was fun. I love it. I'm still close with my teacher. Him and I, he's actually Shaq's teacher as well. He owns a gym called Six Levels. I told you about him with Maya Hill and Grant Hill's daughter. Yeah, she's in that gym, and she's really good, man. She's tough. She's gonna make a run at it.
Yeah, that is an incredible. I remember her first fight. She got an incredible finish. Is she still showing up? She's still going.
Yeah. She had another finish too. She fought up a weight class. She won too. She ended up finishing the girl TKO. So she's got it in her. Yeah, she's got it. Like I said, great coach John Burks, her coach. She's my jiu-jitsu teacher as well. So they're doing their thing over there.
Have you ever talked to Grant about how he feels about his daughter competing in MMA?
Yeah. So I've seen, like, obviously he goes to the events and, you know, her mom goes to the events and, you know, I've asked him, you know, like, you know, how is it? And, you know, he was like, she loves it. So, you know what I mean? I give her support. Obviously he gets nervous about it, but you know, that's what she loves to do. And she spends time, she spends a lot of time on it. And, you know, he's there for the support.
How would you feel if your daughter wanted to be a fighter?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know if I can deal with watching my daughter get hit in the face.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could watch that, to be honest, Ariel.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I would not want that to happen or take part in any of that. By the way, when you compete in jiu-jitsu, like, do you have to tell the teams? Like, how does that work? Because I remember talking to a player, I won't say his name, and he's like, keep this on the DL. They can't know. Is that allowed?
Yeah, I mean, it's a thin line to tread, I think.
Okay.
I do it mostly for training.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm out here competing against guys and, you know, giving up, you know, knee bars and, you know, ankle locks and things like that. Like, my training is really, like I said, with my coach. And then there's a few other people that, you know, I train with, but everybody knows, like, look, I can't really go crazy. I'm just trying to learn techniques. You know, I do have, I go to open roles sometimes, but, you know, everybody really knows not to go crazy.
Right. Yeah. That would not be smart. And then the teams, I guess, would be upset if, especially with the ankles now, probably best to leave that for when you're done. You know, I was watching an interview with you recently that you did while you were in the bubble. It was with Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman. And you guys had a nice little run there. You were playing great in the bubble. It's kind of a depressing thing to rewatch, to be honest, because of the questions that are being asked, because this was like July of 2020. But it was actually a very fascinating look into your life. And I wanted to explore some of this, if you didn't mind. You were talking a lot about mental health. And this is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I've talked about it as well, about overcoming things and being more open. And more players, especially in the NBA, have been talking about it. But you know, some of the stuff that you were saying, I had not known about, you know, just kind of the ups and downs and feeling down when you were out of the league and the injuries and the expectations and whatnot. And so just curious, like, right now, obviously, it seems like things are good. You're back. It's been a long road back. How are you dealing with that? How is the, you know, the mental side of the game for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Like I said, you know, kind of earlier in this interview, you know, I've been through so much in this league. Like, I've been at the highest of highs, I've been at the lowest of lows, you know, having, you know, DMPs, you know what I mean? So, like, I think since I've been through so much, I've learned, you know, how to train my mind to be okay in any situation I'm in and know that there's a bright side and know that there's, you know, that my current situation doesn't last forever. And so, you know, it's taken a lot of work. You know, my mental health has been something that's been up and down and something that I've, you know, had to get work on. I've had to get help. And it's something that, you know, a lot of people go through and people don't really, you know, take it as serious as it should be. And you don't really, for at least for me, I didn't really know kind of what was going on with my mind, you know, for a long time. And to take me to realize that I really needed to be like, okay, I really need to get my mental health intact, because, you know, the way that I think isn't necessarily healthy. And so, you know, fast forwarding until now, you know, I definitely enjoy the moments that that I have that are good, and, you know, a lot more, because I know that, you know, things can change quickly. And, you know, if things do change and you're in a situation where you kind of don't want to be, I've kind of given myself, you know, I've learned ways to, you know, get back into that space where, you know, I could make myself succeed.
So I'm wondering, is this something that has been kind of a constant theme in your life, or was it only once you got to the NBA and you know, things were going up and down that you felt like it was a real issue that you had to deal with?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when growing up, I really didn't have too many issues with that. And you know, kind of things were not just per se easy in my life, but there's a lot of good moments. You know, high school, I was top 25 in the country. I was in the McDonald's All-American game, the Jordan game. There's a lot of good things to focus on. I was trying to get to college. I was getting scholarships left and right. Syracuse was probably the first time in my life where I've really faced some real adversity, on the mental side, just because I had been playing basketball my whole life. And then, you know, my freshman year, I wasn't, you know, kind of playing at all. So I didn't really know how to react to that. But yeah, I think that was the first time I really felt some real adversity. And then the next year was great. And then obviously my rookie year was, you know, one of the best times in my life. And then, you know, things got, you know, a little bit, you know, choppy, and, you know, I had to learn how to deal with different situations.
When did you start thinking that you needed to talk to someone? Because like early on, when someone is feeling a certain way, you don't talk to, you're just like, all right, I'll get through this. Right. But then it kind of reaches a point, a boiling point. And then you, when did that happen?
I think my tipping point was in Houston. I had gotten released from Houston. It was the first time of me getting released to a team. I had issues internally with, I think Tia was my fiance at the time. She was my, she's my wife now. So she ended up, we had, she was young. Charlie was a newborn, and, you know, she ended up leaving. So I was in Houston by myself. I got released from the team. So that was like my lowest of low. And I was like, kind of like, damn, like, where do I go from here? Like, not only, you know, for a job, but, you know, where, what in my life, who do I want to be? You know, what goals, what morals do I want to have for myself? And, you know, I really had to choose, you know, and really had to commit and, you know, really had to get some help, you know, in, you know, the choices that I was making and the things that I was doing, you know, really had to be like, okay, I really need to sit back and really do things for myself so that the people around, I could treat the people around me correctly.
So, you're out of the league, you're released, the mother of your child and your girlfriend is gone. Like not a part of your life.
Not a part of my life. I mean, of course we had a child together. Sure. So, but
you guys weren't together.
We weren't together. We're basically not.
Wow. And for how long did that last?
That lasted for about a year and a half.
Wow.
We weren't together. Yeah.
And yep. How did you deal with that?
That was hard. Like I said, that was the hardest time of my life. You know, a scary, scary thing is for me not to be in the same household and raising my kids. And you know, obviously, you know, I loved Tia to death. So her not, you know, being there was hard. It was a hard thing that, you know, I had to go through and work my ass off to get her back. So
good man.
Yeah. So I, that was definitely the hardest part of my life.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Were there days where you felt like you couldn't get out of bed, couldn't leave the house, things like that?
Yeah. Yeah. There was days where, you know, I was pissed waking up, you know, all I wanted to do was sleep, stay in the bed. You know, the only time where I would go outside is when, you know, my therapist came over and we'd take a walk and, you know, discuss what was going on in my life. And it was hard because at that time, there were some bright spots that I couldn't really appreciate. Like, you know, I was in Houston and then probably about a month, 2 months after that, I got signed to Orlando. And so I had to go to the gym and, you know, put a smile on my face and, you know, try to, you know, reconcile my career there. And then, you know, I would come home and, you know, I would just be in constant thought of, you know, there's no Tia here. There's no, you know, baby, there's no nothing. So I, yeah, it was tough. It was really, really hard.
Who introduced you to your therapist?
I was seeing our team therapist, and then he introduced me to another therapist as well. So I was kind of seeing both of them, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, because I'm always fascinated by that because I feel like that first call or that first meeting is the tough one, right? Because you're not sure, should I open up? Should I not open up? Do I trust this person? Do I like this person? And then once the door is open, I feel like then it gets a lot easier, right? But initially, yeah. I find it tough.
Yeah, no, initially is very hard. Like initially, like you got to lay everything out on the table. Like what's going on with you? What's happened in your past that
right.
is giving you these feelings? You kind of have to explain somebody your whole life. And that brings up different emotions as well. But I think once you get past that, once you get past the choppy steps, you know, it's weird how therapists can, you know, it's amazing how they can, you know, lead you to different answers in your life, just, you know, with communication. So once you get past that, it's, you know, it's one of the best things that I've ever done.
And then the tricky thing is, and why I feel for you and why I give you so much credit for talking about this is your life is so public, right? And especially mm-hmm. you, the rookie of the year and the Syracuse run and your success, your first game, you know, your first game was unbelievable. Like people still talk about it. One of the great debuts in NBA history, right? I just saw someone post a clip about it recently. And so is there any sort of like, any sort of shame, any sort of embarrassment to come with that?
There used to be. I used to always, you know, constantly worry about how people judge me or, you know, how people, you know, judge a role on my team. You know, I kind of felt like no matter if I was a really important piece of my team because I wasn't, first game, Miami, Michael Carter Williams, you know, that there was always be some judgmental there. And, you know, my work would always try to prove those people wrong. And it would just be, you know, it would be such forced, and it wouldn't just be like, I just want to get better just for me and to try to, you know, be the best basketball player that I can be, because this is what I decided when I was 5 years old of what I wanted to do. And this is why I want to keep going. There are moments where I think like, dang, like people are just going to harp on this because it's a negative thing in my life, or it isn't a positive thing in my life. And, you know, it's going to be out on Front Street and people are always going to have to comment on, you know, what it is that, you know, I'm doing, or, you know, how I'm performing. But nowadays, man, it doesn't even bother me. Not a single bit. Like, you can say what you want. You know, I guarantee you the things that I go through is probably some of the same things that you go through. It's just not on Front Street, and I'm not here to judge you. And, you know, since I've had that attitude, there's been a lot less things that I feel like that even come to me, honestly.
Really? Like in terms of negativity?
Yeah, just in terms of negativity, like I just embrace so much positivity. I try to be positive with everybody around me. And it's maybe because I have that attitude. And, you know, maybe that, you know, the auras that come to me are mostly, you know, positive, or maybe I just don't even notice the negativity.
I remember when Philly traded you to Milwaukee that following season, that was shocking as a fan. Do you remember where you were when you got the word? Did you have any idea that that was coming?
No, I had no idea. I remember where I was. So it was me and my two friends. We were driving. I don't know where we were going, but I remember I was in the car and we were driving in Philly. And I remember I was like, man, there's like jokingly, I was like, oh, there's only like 8 minutes left in the trade deadline. I'm like, I'm good. And then I get a call from my agent and I'm like, no way. Like even just looking at the phone ringing, I'm like, man, answered. You're being traded to Milwaukee. Jason Kidd wants you. And I was kind of shocked, and I was like, man, because like I was in meetings with like Sam Hinkie and, you know, Coach Brett Brown about, you know, where our team's going from here. And they're asking me opinions on, you know, this guy and this guy and what we're trying to accomplish, and, you know, things that I never even asked for that I was being a part, you know, to be part of. So for me to get traded, I was totally blindsided. I didn't know what was going on.
When something like that happens, do you speak to management? Like, do you speak to anyone and be like, yo, like what happened here? Or do you just like, how does that work?
Everything's going on so fast. So it's like, my agent was like, yeah, they want you to, you know, they want you down there in like 3 days, 2 days. So like, I got to go pack all my stuff, make a ton of phone calls to get everything in Milwaukee, find housing there, do, you know, go down the whole nine. And then you do get a call from management and they do say like, you know, it was great having you. It's kind of like a goodbye conversation rather than like, hold on a second, like, you know, what happened here that made you guys want to, you know, trade me? Like there was no conversation about that. It just kind of things that are like, for me, the conversation didn't necessarily need to happen just because, you know, things are already done. If there was a chance where things weren't settled, then I'd be like, okay, like, let's talk about this, but things are already done. So I was just like, and plus I was 21 or 22 at the time. I didn't really like speaking to management at that time is a lot different than speaking to management now, right? You feel like you're talking to, you know, somebody who's superior to you.
Right. Did you feel betrayed?
Yeah, I definitely did. Only because, like I said, I was brought into things that I really necessarily didn't ask for. You know what I mean? I didn't tell you guys that I wanted to give you my opinion on who we should get next, or who we're thinking about drafting, or who we, you know, want to trade for in the future, or what our future looks like. Like I didn't ask to be a part of those conversations, but yeah, I was brought into those for you guys just to trade me. It was a difficult situation.
And you were kind of like one of the first building blocks of the trust the process era, right?
Then
like in a flash, you're gone. I could imagine you having some kind of like salty feelings towards them. Like, what the hell?
For sure. I definitely was. And especially because what I've already had went through all year, you know, I'd be willing to bet any money that I had the most teammates ever in a year. So that I was already season. Frustrated. Yeah. That rookie season. So I was like, man, like everything that I've already went through, you know, all the losses, all the new teammates, all the changing going on, and, you know, still stuck by, still try to play my ass off every single game. Try to, you know, stay positive in the locker room through all, you know, the losing. And then, so I definitely did feel betrayed.
You mentioned your agent calling you. That wasn't your mom, right? Your mom your manager, right?
She was my manager.
But and how long was she your manager for?
She was my manager for a while, probably like 7 years. Probably less than that, probably 6 years.
Oh, 6 years in the NBA?
Yeah, 6 years in the NBA, yeah.
And what was that like? You don't hear that quite often.
I mean, there was definitely some good parts about it. You know, obviously having your mom as, you know, your manager, there's some down moments as well. But you know, for the most part, it was good, man. She really helped me save a lot of money. She was the one that was always in my ear, and she did a lot of different things, just everyday things, you know, just making sure that my mind was straight and needed to be focused on what I, you know, the tasks at hand, and, you know, made sure everything in the background was going straight. So it was an interesting, you know, it was an interesting time, but definitely something that I needed at the time.
Here's the thing though. And I'm sure part of you being young, it helped to have your mom there. You can trust her, right? She's not going to try to, but then at what point, like, how do you have the conversation that you're going to go in a different direction? That's your mom at the end of the day. How does that happen?
Yeah. I mean, it was tough. It was hard. I mean, I think it was more, she had so much going on herself. Like, we started in MCW Stars, and that got way bigger than, you know, we ever even thought about. You know, it's an AAU team. We have like 13 girls teams and a couple boys teams as well. But
wow.
So that got, you know, really big, and she started doing, basically, I can't remember the word, but giving advice to parents about, you know, the process for college girls. And so she would have meetings all day, and I was just like, look, mom, like, you got a lot going on yourself. You need to give yourself some more time, at least some free time. Like, I'm at the age where I can find somebody who's a, you know, who can be my manager and help me out and do the things that I need to do. Like, it wasn't a bad thing at all. It was more of a, she just has a lot on her plate and she needs to, you know, kind of focus on that.
Okay. So you guys are cool. Didn't ruin your relationship.
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's mom forever.
All right. That's good. By the way, do most players have agents and managers?
Yeah, most people do, whether it's their friend, you know, but most people, cause it's tough. It's tough to juggle everything.
Right.
There's so much going on that most guys need somebody, you know, kind of in their corner to take care of things behind the scenes.
That year that you got traded to the Bucks, Giannis obviously was in the same draft class as you, but he was, you know, the skinny Greek kid. We started to know year one, two, that he could be something, but like, did you have any idea he would turn into this?
I don't think any idea that he would turn into this. But I did know, I, you know, there was times where you watch him play, and even in practice where we'd have, you know, say we're playing a game up to 11, there'll be like three plays where you're like, holy shit. Like if he can do that like eight times instead of three, then like, it's going to look different. And, you know, as years went on, you know, those three, four times a game where you're like, whoa, this kid could be special, turned into eight, turned into 12. And now you get the final product. So early on, you could see that he was going to be, you know, especially when he started filling out, you know, it was like, yeah, there's probably no one that's going to be able to stop him in a year's time.
Did you like playing for Jason Kidd?
Me and him, we had our ups and downs. I think that for him, it was his first year of coaching as well. So there was a lot of things that he was trying to figure out. For me, it was, you know, I felt a lot of the time I felt as though when he looked at me, he saw a lot in himself, and he would kind of hold that standard. And I remember having many conversations with him being like, you know, I'm not you right now. I'd love to be you in 8 years from now. You know, you're a Hall of Famer. Yeah. Yeah,
oh, wow.
I said that to him, because I thought that there was a lot of pressure on me, you know, when he used to speak to me to do that. And, you know, I wish our relationship was better at the time. I wish there was things that we could have figured out. But I think where I was in my life dealing with just being traded, and where he was in his life with, you know, just being a first time coach, there was a lot of things where we butt heads. But he's one of the best coaches that I've had who in-game time adjustments and what he was able to see throughout the game and little things that he was able to tell me in within the game to do. He was amazing at that. And I think that's what makes him kind of the coach that he is. But our relationship wasn't the greatest. So it was an experience. Like I said, I learned from it. I moved on, got no hate for him, nothing but love for, you know, him and his family.
You talked about having a lot of teammates, also a lot of coaches, just kind of part of the gig. Yep. Favorite coach that you played for in the NBA?
Oof, man.
Excluding your current coach, because, you know, I don't want to get you.
Yeah. Excluding my current coach, I'd probably say Coach Clifford.
Really?
Yeah, having him, you know, as a coach, me and him, I still talk to him a lot. He's probably one of the best coaches I've ever had in the NBA.
Why him?
For sure. I just think that when he's honest, he's, you know, he's brutally honest. So you always know where you're at, you know, mentally, you know, in terms of playing time, in terms of what you need to do to play. You know, I think that he's a defensive coach. I'm a defensive player. So, you know, we mesh well there. I think he respects, you know, what I bring to the game. And, you know, it's in today's game, it isn't, you know, the defensive guy isn't, you know, it's not a really well respected position on the team. So I think those things are his honesty, his integrity. You know, he works hard every single night. So like he's after the game, he's upstairs, you know, watching the game. He's in the gym till 12, first one there. So, you know, I respect his work ethic, and him and I, we had a ton of conversations, you know, outside of basketball, you know, just about life in general. He's a New England guy. He's from New Hampshire, Maine. And so, you know, we've had a bunch of conversations. We know a lot of the same people growing up, and yeah, so he's probably my favorite.
Was there ever a situation that, obviously the Philly one was a little bit different, but that you were feeling good, you enjoyed, and you were like, man, I don't want this to end. And yet the business of basketball, you know, you don't really get to choose where you go unless you're a free agent. Like, was there one in particular that you were happy about leaving, and also really that conversely, that was really, really tough to leave the situation?
Yeah. I mean, even Milwaukee was hard to leave, you know,
really
being traded to Chicago. That was hard. You know, I mean, I didn't have the best relationship with my coach at the time, but I think that, you know, the guys that we had there, you know, me and Giannis, like I say, he's still one of my best friends till today. You know, that was really hard, you know, leaving him. We put so much time in the gym together, every night, you know, after practice, you know, after games, you know, shooting together, you know, working out, lifting. We put a lot of time in. We could see that things were going to be good. You know, we had myself, we had Yanni, we had Chris. You know, I mean, look, I mean, they went on to win a championship, you know, sure, years later, but you could see that core group together was, you know, something special. We had great moments. You know, we beat Golden State when they were undefeated for a while. We were like 21-0. Like we were, you know, we beat them, you know, at home. Like we went to the playoffs. We had a good series against the Bulls. Like there was just things that, you know, we looked forward to and being like, you know, damn, one day I hope together, you know, we're able to be on a team where we can do things like Golden State, you know, we can do things like Cleveland. And so, you know, that was tough. That was tough to leave that situation.
Man, I can't imagine. You just get a phone call, all of a sudden you have to pack your life and leave.
Yeah, that was like, we had just finished up training camp. That was like after, it was our last game of preseason. So I had no training camp with the Bulls. I had no preseason with the Bulls. I was walking into a situation where we had like four guards on the team. And so I was new in that team and didn't know any plays, had to relearn everything really fast. Like, you know, for training camp and preseason is where you really get acclimated, you know, into your teammates, you know, into the coaching staff, into the plays, you kind of set, you know, who's going to be what. And, so that was tough. You know, I was thrown into a situation where it was, I wouldn't say impossible to succeed, but it was tough.
Was that the Dwayne Wade Bulls?
That was D Wade Bulls, Rondo, Jimmy Butler.
What was the Dwayne Wade Bulls like?
That was a crazy year, man. I couldn't tell you. That was a crazy year. I mean, it was a weird situation. Like we had Jimmy D. Wade, Rondo, Taj Gibson, like a bunch of old guys. And we had Fred Hoiberg was his first year of coaching.
Right.
So, and we had Rondo. So there was like, it was a bunch of guys that have been there for 12 plus years. And then a rookie, you know, head coach couldn't have been easy for him just by the situation given. And so there was just a lot of situations where I was just like, I'll never forget these.
Really? Were you happy when that one was over?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just a lot. It was just a lot going on. Like I needed to go somewhere where, you know, there wasn't so much going on and, you know, we could just focus on basketball.
Excluding the current squad that you're with, best locker room that you've ever been a part of, where it just seemed like everyone were there, everyone was friends, tight, enjoy. There was no like one lone wolf type. You know what I mean? Like no black sheep,
Yeah, Charlotte for sure.
Really?
Yeah, I had Marvin Williams, Kemba Walker, Jeremy Lamb, Frank Kaminsky. You know, those guys are. I still talk to those guys till this day. Like we had an unbelievable locker room. It was just, you know, like our guys that have been there for a while, our leaders were Kemba and Marvin Williams. And those are probably the two nicest dudes I've ever met in the NBA in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, like what makes them so great? Just like good teammates, humble guys.
Great teammates, humble human beings. You ask anybody about Kemba or Marv. Like, for example, that was we had a game and I think we were playing Portland. And one of the guys from the Blazers actually got into it with Marv. Okay. And I saw one of the guys from the Blazers, his own teammate, grab his own teammate and was like, no,
not like, this
you're
guy.
Not, we're not doing that. Like Marv is just like one of the best human beings that, you know, you can meet. And Kemba's the same way. Nice to everybody. Doesn't say, you know, one of those people who doesn't say a mean thing about anybody, no matter what, both of them. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not even like, as you know what I mean? I've had my fair share of, you know, things between people, but you know, those guys, they don't say a word.
I really wanted it to work out with Kemba and the Knicks. I wanted that to work out for him. You know, I thought it would like to have a New York City point guard on the Knicks would have been so great.
That would be great.
Yeah. It seemed like everyone liked him, but just one of the, maybe a few years too late. And so it's great that you still keep in touch with a lot of these guys.
And
that's amazing. So like, that's probably, you know, obviously you want to be playing, you want to be, you know, but just getting to see them still and go from, you know, city to city, arena to arena, that has to be part of the fun as well, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm always, you know, going from city to city, checking in with guys, going to dinner with, you know, different teammates that I've had in the past. It's great. Like I said, you know, through basketball, I've met some of the best people, some of my best friends, and I'm always keeping in touch with them. I went to Marvin's wedding. I think it was 2 years ago, Marvin Williams' wedding, and Kemba should be getting married soon. So
nice. As far as guarding people, like you said, you take pride in your defense. Who's one guy that you always like? You felt like you got up for, like, I want to freaking stop this guy. Like, I like the challenge.
Oh, I think Steph.
Really?
Yeah, Steph. Yeah. And he's probably the hardest guy I've probably had to,
hardest
point guard I've ever had to guard. But yeah, no, his game was, I mean, you just know, like, there's no, like, cause you can't relax ever. So I'm always like, I gotta be up for this game. Like, I gotta be ready to move. I gotta be ready to run, you know, everywhere on the court. And, it's been fun, man. I mean, I've had, you know, not even in a talking trash type of way, like I've had some good success against him. And just to know, it feels good to know, like, dang, the best player in the world in my position, I'm able to, you know, have some success against. It's like, that's what I've worked hard for since I was, you know, a young kid. And to do that is, you know, it's something to be proud of yourself for.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite game, a favorite moment?
Yeah, probably my favorite game is probably when we did beat Golden State when I was in Milwaukee. It was just a game that, you know, together of our whole team, we were like, man, like, this is just a great opportunity to do what, you know, to make a little history, to stop their streak. And they were obviously rolling. And, you know, we were, you know, we had our whole crowd was in t-shirts with 21-1. Like, there's just, the whole environment was just awesome. And we just played such a great game together as a team, where everybody contributed and did, you know, the right things, is probably, you know, my favorite game. And it's probably, you know, it has a lot to do with them being 21-0.
Right. No, of course.
For sure.
Just a couple more things and I'll let you go. And I really appreciate
the
time.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you so much. Could I ask you about Ja Morant and your take on the situation? You know what it's like to have everyone watching you, and obviously his situation a little bit different, and you never got into anything like that. But I feel like most people think that he'll be able to turn things around and this is just a bump in the road for him. But when you're seeing it from the outside looking in, and I don't know if you have a relationship with him, what comes to mind?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't have a relationship with him. I don't know him just by, I only know him just by playing. Obviously it's a tough situation for him. He's made some immature choices. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll learn from it. He'll move on. Coming from, Murray State, coming from, being the underdog, and proving everything that he's proven. I know deep inside he's feeling like, there's no way I could give all that up, everything that I've done, just because of, silly decisions that I've made in the past. And to keep doing them and not learn from them is something that I think that, he will, I hope he does. He's so talented, like one of the most talented guys I've ever seen on the floor. So, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll learn from it, move on. Like, there's a certain level of embarrassment that he probably feels that could change you as well. I think that, making those mistakes, and I think in today's world, it's hard, right? Like, you got to allow people to make mistakes in life for them to get better as human beings, right? Like, isn't that what, life's all about, doing things and learning from them and moving on. So, as much as people want to critique him and want to get on his back for doing the things he's doing and what he represents, a big organization is, his brand is big himself, he's obviously taking the biggest hit from it. So, I'm a big fan of allowing people to make their mistakes and, wishing them well, and hopefully they can, overcome that.
I know this isn't like a really popular thing to say, especially to an athlete, but I feel for you guys in many respects. Number one, I mean, like, could you imagine in the 80s and 90s if there was Instagram and Twitter and all this, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Imagine the Jordan era. This has been said before, like him going to Atlantic City supposedly and whatnot. Like, could you imagine the phones and all that stuff, all the stuff that they went through? And then also, the other thing is like, and correct me if you feel otherwise, I feel like you make one mistake on the court, now all of a sudden everyone's sharing this clip and clowning on you. And there's almost like this fear of failure when in reality, like, you got to go for it. Like, you're playing, you got to put your body on the line. And I think that's detrimentally tough for you guys. Like, you're in this fishbowl and everyone's scrutinizing every single thing, and you make one mistake, you get dunked on or crossed over, and now you're being ridiculed on Twitter. You're a freaking pro athlete at the highest level of your sport, and there's dudes on Twitter. Does that mess guys up? Do you feel like that's a big part of the problem?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I've been a victim of that myself. It takes work to just be like, hey, if that happens, that happens. But there's more important things on the line than that. And, especially the league gets younger and younger each year. So, guys come in and they're like, you can see times where, you can look and be like, oh man, that guy could have probably took a charge if he wanted to, but he's a little scared. He'll get dunked on, and then, right. He ends up a meme. Or even the saying, like, you think I wanted to end up being a meme? Like, even that itself is like,
that wasn't a thing 10 years ago.
That wasn't a thing. So I think you have a valid point on that people are, afraid to end up, being that, which takes away from, what they may do on the court.
You ever check your phone in the middle of a game?
That's another thing that's new. That's at halftime. There's a lot of people who check their phones. Like, that's
dangerous,
that's a,
right?
That's a new, yeah. That's
checking that, social media and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily check social media. I may check if I have a text message, or, a lot of the times, especially when I was playing, my stepfather, he's always been in my, corner. He gives me advice about the game all the time. So I mostly check to see if he CC something that, to tell me, what, to do in the game.
Okay. But no, people, you don't think young guys are checking Twitter?
They probably do.
And then you get hate, and that's got to mess you up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it messes me up. I do a show and I'm checking Twitter, and all of a sudden I'm like, God, I suck. Yeah. I'm the worst.
didn't Steph say that he kind of uses that as motivation? Like, he'll check.
I guess he's just a different breed. I mean, I would want to go into a ball in the corner and cry. Shit that you guys get.
I mean, yeah, just proving the point that it happens, though.
Yeah. Right. I hate that. Jim Boeheim, no longer the coach at Syracuse. You played for him. Are you surprised to see him go at this point, or do you think that it was time?
I do think it was time. You know, he's been there for what, 47 years. He's seen everything. He's done everything you could accomplish. You know, he's getting up there in age. Not to say that he couldn't coach, you know, the next 5 years, but I think that, you know, I think when your time is over for something, you know, it's over. And I think having Coach Autry coming in and having GMAC as the head one assistant is they're going to do well. I think they're going to bring a new energy to the team. You know, they've had Syracuse had some down years the past couple of years. So I think it's time. I think it is time for a change. And, you know, he's done, you know, obviously it's, you know, you could go on and on what Coach Boeheim has done for Syracuse. So, but yeah, I do think it is time for a change.
I saw you wrote a nice post in honor of him. Do you still have a relationship with him at all?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, he's older, so he doesn't use his phone that much. But, you know, me and I definitely send him a text. You know, I probably talk to him every couple months, just, you know, just checking in, saying what's up. You know, I'd send him a message as well, just a thank you and congrats on, you know, retirement. He's got kids now, too. His kids, you know, Jimmy and Buddy and baby girl, too. They're all out of school, I believe. His daughter might still be in college, but, you know, the rest of them are, you know, out of college.
Speaking of people watching, like I heard like he's a junkie, like he watches everything. So would you get texts from him in the middle of games as well? Like he's watching you. He doesn't do that.
No, he doesn't do that.
Okay. All right. I just, you know, and now you're getting an up close look at Paolo Banchero. Your thoughts on him?
And I think he's going to be really good. Like he doesn't even know how good he is right now.
Really?
So, and the things he does and the way he does, you know, things are beyond his years. I think like he gets 20 a night and he doesn't even get easy bat. He gets some easy baskets, some games, but like consistently, he doesn't get those easy ones that he can get. Right. And he still gets 20 a night. You know, I think he's going to be really, really good.
Does that remind you at all of Giannis in a way? I know maybe he's, you know, Giannis was a little bit more unrefined.
Yeah, Giannis was definitely more raw than he was.
Right.
Than he is right now. He's more skilled than Giannis was at 19, 20 years old, I think.
Crazy. And I had read that you're a big time reader. Are you still reading?
Yep. Still reading.
What are we reading?
I just finished up a book. It's called The Motivation, I believe. I can't remember who writes it, but it was like The Motivation and Meditation. The Visualization. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Visualization. It was a visualization book. It was good. There was a lot of good tactics in there, a lot of good things to, you know, to teach me, you know, how to visualize and the different exercises in there that, you know, that that I'm definitely, you know, excited to try out.
So those are the kinds of books that you're reading.
I usually read like three self-help books and then I'll read something like random.
Okay. Yeah. And by the way, why do we cut the hair?
So I don't know, man. Like I wanted to keep it long and then I put it in dreads. And then
it was cool. Like, I love the dreads.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just got sick of it, man. I just got tired of it. And then I got signed to a team and I was like, you know what? Like I'm going in, I'm cutting them off and going in, but I'm growing my hair back out again. I'm just not going to put in dreads. So.
Okay. Was it weird to cut them?
Yeah, it was weird. It was like, my barber was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, just do it. Let's just do it. It was
beeswax and everything. Did you do that whole thing with the beeswax? Is that how you had them?
He just cut them. He just
no,
cut
like them when you made them, like when you actually made the dreads.
Yeah. They had wax and everything.
Sick.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to have dreads, but I just wasn't cool enough. Thick hair. I got the thick hair, but it just didn't quite get it. I had the fro back in the day at Syracuse. I was rocking the fro.
Did you?
Yeah, I'll send it to you, man. It was like it was actually quite big. It was like 1970s style, but I just couldn't go to that next step to get the dreads. You know, and it's like a whole other level. And I just
It is a different level. Did your brother have a fro too or no?
Not quite as big as mine. My bro, David. Yeah. But you know, he was trying to copy my game. You know,
he was trying to get you copy your style.
Exactly. But he's way cooler than I am now, especially these days. This has been wonderful, man. I really appreciate the time. Great to talk to you more about your life and your career. And I'm so happy that you're back in the league. So happy that you're back with the Magic. It seems like you really found a home there. And so it only felt fitting that you would come back to them. And now you can be this, you know, this veteran, but I know you want to get active and not just be that guy. So I wish you nothing but the best, and I hope you remain healthy and we get another 10 years of MCW in the NBA. That would be tremendous. Yeah, thank you so much for doing
that. Thank you. Thank you, Ariel. I appreciate you having me.
All right, that was great stuff. Much love to Michael Carter Williams. Appreciate his time very, very much. And again, love that he's back in the league, and hopefully he's able to go on a run here and get healthy and really be a nice veteran piece for this very, very young Orlando Magic team. One of the best guys that I've met in the game, and really appreciate him giving us so much time and being so honest about some of the not so fun things to discuss, like mental health and depression and whatnot. So wish the best to him and his family. If you follow him on social media, go check out that clip of him in the huddle with his daughter. That was amazing stuff. I can assure you he'll never forget that, and I hope she'll never forget that as well. Michael Carter Williams, our guest this week. Thank you so much to him. Thank you to everyone out there who continues to listen to the show, who continues to rate, follow, subscribe, review, comment. All those things mean a lot. I appreciate you all very much, and I can't wait for next week. We'll be back with another conversation right here on the Ariel Helwani Basketball Show. Take care.